Mel Gibson defends the resurrection and Mark Zuckerberg defends himself on Joe Rogan's podcast. Plus, will the United States buy Greenland? And a new church is consecrated on the location of Christ's baptism on the Jordan. We're going to talk about all this and more today on Crisis Point. Hello, I'm Eric Sams, your host, editor-in-chief of Crisis Magazine. Before we get started, I just want to encourage people, smash that like button like Trump wants to. I was going to say Trump wants to smash Greenland, but I guess he don't want to smash Greenland. He just wants to take it over. Anyway, smash the like button nonetheless. Also, subscribe to the channel, let other people know about it. Subscribe to our email newsletter. Just go to crisismagazine.com, put in your email address, and we'll send you articles each morning, usually two a day. You can also follow us on social media at Crisis Mag. Also, thank you for those who are going to join us today in the live chat. We record these live, and so people who join the live chat, particularly on YouTube. I think we pick up the comments on Facebook as well for people who join us there. Feel free to make your comments, interact with other people in the chat, and also we'll try to grab some for the end of the program for me to address and maybe answer if there are questions. So last week on Joe Rogan's podcast, he had quite the lineup. And one of his first guests last week that I was most interested in was Mel Gibson. And I'm just going to say you got to listen to the Mel Gibson interview on Joe Rogan's podcast last week. So I was telling my son he needed to listen to it. And he said, well, how crazy was Mel? I said, well, on a scale of 1 to 10, probably around 8 or 9. I said, well, how accurate, how true was he? I said, on a scale of 1 to 10, about 8 or 9. I mean, it was a very Mel Gibson-like performance. I'm not saying he was faking it, just like his personality is just very crazy, just a little bit insane. And it was just fascinating. He talked a lot about his movie that he is making, the sequel to The Passion of the Christ, The Resurrection of the Christ. And it sounds wild because he talks about going all the way back to, like, he wants to start it at the fall and the angels and the devils and the fall of the angels and man. He goes all the way to the death of the last apostle. I don't know how you get all that in one movie, but he's going to try. And to be honest, if you told me, okay, Hollywood's going to make a movie about the fall of man, about spiritual forces, the battle between good and evil, demons and angels, Christ maybe being the 3 days in Hades, I would have said there's literally no way they could pull that off except for one man. Only one person on earth, I think, could potentially pull that off and not be cheesy, not be heretical, not just be awful, and that's Mel Gibson. So the fact that he's going to try to pull it off is great. But the interview just had so much in it. And yes, he does address on some level his Seti Vacantism. It's always rumored that Mel Gibson's a Seti Vacantist. I don't know if he's ever publicly just stated flatly, I don't think Francis is the Pope or whatever the case may be, but it's always been rumored. And he suggested that in the interview. And I thought that was unfortunate, to be honest, because he talked about like some conspiracies related to John the 23rd not being a valid Pope back in the 1958 when he was elected. The conclave wasn't valid, making him Pope. But he really did was kind of weak on that. He talked about there being a counterfeit church, quoting Archbishop Vigano, a counterfeit church. So some of that stuff was a little bit outside of what I believe. But he was very good about just stating that there's corruption in the church. I mean, this is Joe Rogan's podcast. You have to recognize where you are, first of all. If you try to defend the institution beyond it deserves, you're going to get hammered by Rogan and hammered by his audience. Obviously, you can defend an institution where it should be defended, and the Catholic Church has a lot it can be defended on, but it also has many aspects of it that cannot be defended. By that, I mean men in it, men who help run it. And he brought McCarrick's name up, World's name up, about sexual abuse by clergymen, things like that. And I thought that was good because it establishes you as credible, that you're not just a robot who's just going to say whatever the institution tells you to say, but instead you're going to be honest about it. I thought that was very good. Also, he brought Pachamama, which was wild because, of course, Rogan didn't believe it. He was like, what are you talking about? And this is something I know there's a whole gaslighting campaign going on among many Catholics over the past few years to act like Pachamama didn't really happen or what happened wasn't what it was. They're trying to say, it's racist to say the Pachamama was an idol because it really was just an Amazonian depiction of the Blessed Mother and blah, blah, blah. I lived through it. I remember it very well. It was only 5 years, less than five, about 5 years ago. I remember very well what happened, and I know what happened. It was an idol at the Vatican that was venerated by people at the Vatican, by including hierarchs at the Vatican. And everybody knew Pachamama was not a depiction of the Blessed Virgin Mary. Everybody knew it was an Amazonian goddess, and it was venerated. Now, I actually think that there's a decent chance that some of even the bishops and cardinals who were there kind of during the veneration of it did not know what was going on. I mean, I'm actually willing to give the benefit of doubt and say not everybody there understood what was going on. And even Pope Francis might not understood at the time what was going on. But the fact is it was an idol. It was at the Vatican and it was venerated by members of the church. And there was no apology given afterwards. In fact, it was people were trying to defend it today, which is just ridiculous. But Mel Gibson just called it out. He called it out for what it is. But I felt like the best part of the interview with Mel Gibson was his defense of the resurrection. After all, he's making a movie about the resurrection. Now, people can make a movie about the resurrection, not believe in it. It'd be a terrible movie, of course. But Mel Gibson really believes in it. And he gave a very spirited defense of the resurrection because obviously Joe Rogan doesn't necessarily believe in it. I don't believe he's a Christian. And so Rogan was like, yeah, I know this is resurrection is the most important doctrine of the church of Christianity. And he's right. It is. And Mel Gibson made it very clear that he believes that Jesus Christ truly rose from the dead. I mean, he said very clearly, this man was murdered in full sight of everybody. And 3 days later, he walked out of the grave. And as he said on the podcast, Buddha didn't do that. I keep this a family podcast, but it was a word for human excrement. Anyway, but obviously his point was nobody else claims to have risen from the dead. No other founder of a religion. That really is what's distinct about Christianity. Because if you think about it, all the religions, Islam, Buddhism, Judaism, Hinduism, whatever, their founders or the people who most represent, you know, like Moses or whatever, or Muhammad or Buddha or whoever, none of them raised from the dead. None of them claimed to have risen from the dead. Only Jesus Christ has risen from the dead. And so it really marks it as unique. And Mel Gibson, I thought, did an excellent job making it very clear that he believes Jesus Christ rose from the dead. And I think we need to recognize this really, I admit, I'm very fascinated by this because of my interest in evangelization. I've been involved in evangelization for a long time. I think we have a very cookie cutter attitude towards what evangelization really is. Like when I evangelize, my way of talking to people about the faith is a very specific way. I have my own background and I talk about it typically in a more apologetical, intellectual way. I have my own experiences. I don't have experiences of, for example, being very far from the faith. I grew up Protestant, but I was a practicing Protestant my whole life before I became Catholic. I don't have I didn't go into the depths of drug addiction or sin or anything, like terrible sins or anything like that. I mean, I'm a sinner just like everybody else, but I think everybody knows what I mean. And so I have a certain experience. Mel Gibson has a very different one. And the audience matters for how authentic you're going to come across and how people will listen to you. The audience of Joe Rogan's podcast is going to listen to Mel Gibson a lot more than they listen to somebody like me. In fact, I put on X and I asked the question, like, who do you think would be a good defender of Catholicism on Rogan's podcast? And I was saying, I don't think he'd be somebody who's a professional Catholic. By that, I don't mean a derogatory way, like some people do. I mean, like you have your bishops, your priests, they're obviously professional Catholics. You have people who make their living talking about the church. That's me. college professors, you know, podcasters, people like that. I personally don't think any of them would necessarily do that well. People are saying, oh, get Scott Hahn on there, or Michael, Father Michael Schmitz, or something like that. Obviously, somebody like Scott Hahn and Father Michael Schmitz will explain the faith better than most people. But I don't know if their experience, their life experience will make them as authentic to the audience. Because here is the key thing about evangelization. Here's why I say we can't put it into a box. Evangelization, first and foremost, comes from talking about your own personal experience. Mel Gibson's personal experience is very different from mine or Scott Hahn's or Father Michael Schmitz or somebody like that. And his personal experience is going to resonate a lot better with the Joe Rogan audience than, for example, mine would, or Scott Hahn's would, or Father Michael Schmitz. And so I really think that the fact is, Mel Gibson wasn't giving an apologetical course. He wasn't like trying to defend it in some formal intellectual way. In fact, later in the podcast, Joe Rogan asked him about evolution. He just basically says, I don't really believe that. I don't really believe the Darwinian explanation for how human life began. And Rogan pushed him a lot on this. Clearly, Rogan must believe in it. And Mel Gibson was just like, I can't explain it. I just know I don't really believe it. I don't think we come from monkeys. I don't think we come from single cells organisms. And honestly, it was a beautiful defense of Catholicism. Again, I know there's a whole debate about evolution, and I've talked about it on this podcast a lot before, but I think the idea of somehow some natural process jumping from a monkey to a man without really God being involved is just ludicrous. And I thought Mel Gibson just simply saying, I just don't accept it. I don't believe the story. I thought it was very good because ultimately that gives the person in the audience who might have his own doubts about evolution, this dominant atheistic explanation for how the universe and how man began, he will feel more comfortable when he's around friends who might be pushing him on it to say, I just don't believe in this. If Mel Gibson, who's literally like one of the coolest guys on earth in the sense of like people look at him like, okay, this is a guy who we can look towards as an example for just in the culture, then I think that's very good. And so even though he didn't have like some scientific explanation, you know, I had that, I apologize to the priest I had on a couple months ago, the society priest who was talking about the beginnings of the universe and he was against evolution. He could give go down a list of exactly why human evolution of the species isn't really true scientifically and all that and theologically. Mel Gibson can't do that, but he can just simply say, I don't believe it. And I think that was powerful. I also think it's powerful the fact that Mel Gibson is a very flawed human being. I got pushback on X also from priests and others like, oh, he's a terrible example. We shouldn't promote him and stuff like that because, you know, he does all these terrible things. Honestly, I know this is thrown around a lot, but that sounds very pharisaical to me. I mean, after all, think about who Jesus picked as the apostles. These were not men of distinction. These were men who had great flaws. I mean, he picked as the first pope a man who had great flaws. But he picked them because they loved him and they wanted to serve him. And I think that's clear in Mel Gibson that he recognizes there is a God and that God doesn't mess around. What I mean by that is so many people today, what they do is they sin and then they try to defend it to God. They try to explain it away. What Mel Gibson does is that he sins like the rest of us, and he sins actually greatly in a lot of ways by his own admission, but he doesn't try to explain away. He acknowledges it's a sin. It reminds me of a story, something happened to me back. I think I've told this story before on the podcast, but when I was in college as a Protestant, looking into Catholicism, my roommate actually had a friend who was Catholic. And he partied it up on Saturday nights. He committed the sins you would expect a college student to commit on Saturday nights. But he'd go to Mass every Sunday. But here's the thing. He didn't receive communion. And I thought this was very bizarre. And I even asked him about it. I'm like, because I didn't understand Catholicism very well. Like, why don't you know what's going on here? He goes, well, I know what I'm doing on Saturday is wrong. And I know it just would make it worse to go to communion. So he didn't go to communion. And I was struck by that. And actually, I was attracted to that type of faith because here's the thing. We know it'd be best if he just didn't do the sins on Saturday night and then he could go to communion on Sunday. But the alternative a lot of people pick is they either do one of two things. They go do the sins on Saturday night and then just don't go to Mass, or they do the sins on Saturday night and then they receive communion. His choice of the sins on Saturday night but then not going to communion is actually the second best after not sinning. But it shows a certain respect for God that I think God can work with and then will lead you eventually, hopefully, to not committing those sins and receiving communion. But I think that's something very, there's something very Catholic about that, and there's something beautiful about it. And I was very struck by Mel Gibson's interview. Again, I don't agree with everything he said in the interview. I'm not defending everything he said in the interview. What I'm saying, though, is it was a very authentic example of evangelization. He wasn't even trying to evangelize, I'm sure, and that's why it made it so authentic. And I think it's a good lesson for us who want a very, and us, I mean by me too, who want a very clean way. We want a Bishop Barron, a Scott Hahn, a Trent Horn, all whom do a good job in many ways of evangelization apologetics. But I think sometimes the messy, just personal witness and just saying, I believe in the resurrection in front of an audience that mostly might not, or I don't believe in evolution in front of an audience that might mostly believe in it. I think that's very powerful, and it can really, I think it can impact hearts. So kudos to Mel Gibson for that. And again, watch that on the Rogan show from last week. Also on the Joe Rogan show last week, the next day after Gibson, was Mark Zuckerberg. And I thought this was also interesting because basically it was like Zuckerberg is wants to make it clear. He made an announcement on, you know, Facebook, I assume, or Instagram, that they're going to change their fact checking. They're going to get rid of fact checking. And they're going to do community notes like X does. And he basically admitted the fact checking was failing, that they were deleting information that was true. It was very politicized. And so he really understood that this was a flawed system. And he explained his own evolution in thought in this. He basically, what he said was originally, you know, he founded Facebook and Facebook at the beginning years of Facebook in order for lots of people to be able to speak their minds freely. But then he said they basically gone astray. And after the 2016 elections, and especially COVID, there was too much censorship on the platform. And so now they want to get away from that. Now, this got a huge reaction from people, because what I found was that conservatives particularly, they really do not want to forgive Mark Zuckerberg, and they really do not want to see this as a win. Now, here's the thing that we have to note. Mark Zuckerberg actually didn't apologize. I put in the thumbnail for this, like, censorship apologies. That's actually not true. Zuckerberg didn't actually say, I'm sorry. He just simply said, we're going to do things. We had done some things wrong in the past. Now we're going to do them better. And he didn't really take personal responsibility like I did. I apologize for the people I deplatformed, for the people that I villainized, essentially, for saying things that were true. And he should have apologized. And I get that he didn't apologize. That being said, this is, I think, a big victory. And I feel like I just want to tell Catholics and conservatives sometimes, learn how to take a W. This is a W. I'm not saying trust Mark Zuckerberg. I'm not saying treat him as one of us. I'm not saying in the future he's not going to do bad things. What I am saying, though, is this is a win. Here's why I look at it. What I see happen is often we get wins like this, and Catholics will come to me, or conservatives, or I'll see them say things like, oh, this is really just a deep state move to really, you know, enshrine certain things, or it's really, you can't, you know, this is just their way of trying to suck you in, and this isn't really victory. And I just don't get that. Because I feel like unless it was a complete transformation of our culture overnight to a Catholic monarchy, these people wouldn't be happy. They wouldn't accept any victory. If you want to get to that Catholic society one day, how do you think you get there except for by taking baby steps to get there? You have to take steps there. Well, Facebook loosening its censorship regime is one of those steps that has to happen. And so for me, I'm like, okay, this is one step closer. This is, you know, Elon taking over Twitter. That was a huge step forward. Zuckerberg, even though he's not going full Elon on us, he is basically saying, okay, we did it wrong, and we're going to do it better in the future. And if he does do it better, that's a win. That's a W on the path towards the eventual goal. And so I talked about this a little bit last week, I think, but I just feel like we need to be more, not so black-pilled that every news story is somehow negative. No matter what, we twist it in a way that this is somehow bad for us. Some news stories are very bad for us. And let's be honest, we had a few years there where every news story seemed to be bad for us. I mean, particularly the years 2020, 2022, 23, we had a lot of bad news stories. A lot of things were working against us. That's another reason though, I think we should recognize, hey, we're having some victories here. We haven't won the war. There's a long way to go, but we've won some victories. Take the victory and acknowledge it, celebrate it even, and then move on. Another thing I would say is people change over time and in different paces. Mark Zuckerberg might be on a path that leads him to basically our side, maybe even Catholicism. I think if we just act like that's not possible because of his past, because of bad things he's done in the past, I think that's not really a Catholic attitude. The fact is perhaps he is moving in the right direction. I mean, Elon was a big liberal at one point, and he's still liberal in some ways, but he's helping us a lot. Robert F. Kennedy Jr., he was bad in a lot of things before, now he's getting better. I mean, Trump was bad in the past, and now he's getting better. I think we should say, like, hey, let's be willing to accept the advances these people make, understanding they're not all the way there yet. And I honestly think that with Zuckerberg, the fact that he is like into jiu-jitsu and now eats, you know, carnivore diet or close to that or something like that, I honestly think that might make a difference. I think that might be what's turning him into a more masculine person. I think it might be as simple as he just has more testosterone than he did before. I know that might sound kind of silly, but I think it's possible. So I think we should say, yeah, it's possible Mark Zuckerberg is actually getting better. And let's acknowledge that and be grateful for it. Recognizing he's not all the way there and recognizing it might be just because Trump won. And so he's just kind of, you know, reading the tea leaves and saying, okay, I have to go in this direction to be successful business-wise. Even if that's the case, that's still a victory. Because again, what it means is more truth will be available on Facebook, on Instagram, on the very various meta channels. And so we should be happy about that. And like I said, take the win. I mean, I don't know what you think a win looks like, but this is what a win looks like. So let's go ahead and take it. Let's not be too black-pilled. In other news, I want to talk about this Greenland situation. Okay, I will admit, for years now, I have felt that the United States has to shrink. I feel like we're too big to succeed, is why I wrote that back in 2015 at my personal blog, I remember. So 10 years now, I've been talking about this. Most conservatives don't like to hear that, but I really do think that's the case. I think we've gotten to the fact that our federal government is just too large. And so when Trump started talking about maybe taking over, you know, having Canada be the 51st state, maybe taking control of the Panama Canal, and then maybe buying out Greenland, I admit I was like, that's the opposite direction I want to go. But I will say I've warmed a bit to it. The Greenland, not Canada or in Panama Canal, just make that a business transaction where it works out better for us. Canada's, I think that's trolling. I think that's just Trump trolling in order to negotiate and get a better relationship with Canada moving forward. But I don't think the Greenland is trolling. I think it's legit that Trump wants to buy it. Because if you look into it, there are strategic reasons why a U.S. relationship with Greenland or even control of Greenland is to our advantage. First of all, its location. It's actually in our hemisphere. People don't realize that. It's not European. It's American. It has very few people, but it has large deposits of natural resources. It also militarily could be useful for the United States in with our relationship with Russia and things of that nature. Now, here's the thing that, you know, is ultimately, I think what has to happen with Greenland is if the people of Greenland vote to join the U.S. in some way, I do think we should respect that and allow them to do that. I don't think we should refuse to let them. Now, I will say this, though. I'm very, very skeptical of any polls right now that show Greenlanders want to be part of the United States. I feel like that could just be the propaganda push to get us to get take over Greenland. I mean, you see this like before wars, for example, for the Iraq war, the whole propaganda push that weapons of mass destruction, which was all false. And you get the whole media, everybody talking about, oh, yeah, this is true. It's not really true. And then you take radical action based upon something that's false. And so I would say it had to be an actual vote. I do think having Greenland as a 51st state is not a good idea. I think it should be something like a U.S. territory like Puerto Rico, where it has U.S. influence, U.S. Protection, and it can help the United States, but it's not an actual full-fledged state. I don't think that's a good idea. I don't think, obviously, Canada should be part of the United States. I'm with Kennedy Hall, our friendly Canadian. Canada should not be part of the United States. But Greenland, yeah, perhaps. I still ultimately do think that the United States is going to have to break up. And I think it can break up in such a way that we are still a strong land. What I mean by that is maybe not one nation, maybe multiple nations, but I think we could have trees between the different areas. And I just feel like we're moving that direction anyway. But Greenland, I don't think really takes away from that. Like you could have Greenland still be U.S. territory and still talk about, for example, California, Oregon, and Washington, you know, leaving the United States or something like that. But anyway, so I think it's interesting. I ultimately think what Trump is doing here is he's setting the narrative. It's brilliant politically what he's doing. Let's be honest. Because what happens to a lot, actually conservatives fall in this a lot, conservative politicians. They're always on defense. They're always responding to the latest media attacks. They're always typically apologetic. Even when they're kind of fighting back, they're still responding. They're being reactionary. Greenland wasn't even on the map, pardon the pun, wasn't even on the map, you know, just a month ago. Now all of a sudden everybody's talking about it. Why? Because Trump brought it up. He can control the narrative. Instead of talking about that stupid sentencing he had even some of his picks, nominees for various offices, he can set the conversation, the national conversation of should the United States expand. Also, I think it's brilliant politically because it's a very optimistic view of America, which I think on a political standpoint is very good. I don't have a very optimistic view of the future of America long term, but I get politically that works. I'm not running for office, so I don't care. I don't have to. But when you're talking about the United States growing, that just gets people kind of more patriotic, more optimistic about the future of the country. If we're thinking about growing, we must be doing pretty well. Now, I think underneath, we're not in a lot of ways. But again, I'm not running for office. I don't have to be optimistic. I mean, I just had this whole thing about white pilling before. Now I'm talking about being negative. Okay, I'm schizophrenic too. But the point is that I think Trump bringing this up is brilliant politically because again it sets the narrative and it also gives an optimistic view of the future, which I think is, you know, helps him politically getting more people behind him. So again, will it happen? I don't know. I'm not as opposed to my first gut reaction was no, but again, no to Canada. Panama Canal, let's just work something out where the deal's better for us to use it. And Greenland, yeah, if the people of Greenland, remember, there's only 56,000 people there. If they vote and say, yeah, we want to be a U.S. territory, I say, come on in, the water's warm or cold, as the case may be. The next thing I want to talk about briefly was last week on the podcast, I mentioned how the Archbishop of San Antonio, Gustavo, he was tweeting things, posting things on X that were just insane. He was blaming Trump for violence. The violence in New Orleans. Here, I think I have this right here. Let me pull this up. Yeah, he was saying, why these tragedies? Because elect president's words in the last few years, if we trigger actions, what do we want? And, you know, he doesn't write very well, good English. It's actually pretty terrible. But basically, he was blaming Trump for the violence in New Orleans. Well, there's a lot of pushback, and now his account has been deactivated on X. Now, he had been controversial in the past, but this probably is the most pushback he got. And I will say this is another white pill. I feel like everything's white pills this week. I have a white pill the week coming up, but I feel like everything's a white pill. Mel Gibson, you know, defending the resurrection is a white pill. Zuckerberg is a white pill. Even Greenland could be a white pill. And now this. I don't know if he got pressure from the Vatican or if just pressure from internally from his own people or what, or he just realized he had gone overboard. But it's a good thing, because here's the thing, and I'm sorry, priests who are listening and bishops who are listening right now, but I really do think this. The vast majority of priests and bishops on the internet should not be on it, on social media should not be on it. They do a terrible job. They just don't represent the priesthood or the episcopacy very well. There are exceptions, and if you're a priest or bishop listening to this, maybe you're one of them. You probably are if you're listening to this podcast. You're a smart guy, right? But the point is that I think a lot of them should not be on social media. It's just not good. It demeans them in a lot of ways. And this was demeaning to the office of the episcopacy, Archbishop Gustavo of San Antonio. So I'm very happy that he left. Maybe he saw my podcast last week and realized I need to get off. I'm getting hammered by Eric Sams on Crisis Point. I don't know. Probably not. Okay, finally, and this is our official white pill of the week. I try to have this each week. Although, like I said, this week, a lot of them were. This is a cool story. Here, let me try to pull it up here real quick. Wasn't ready for this. Okay, I have it here. Okay, a Catholic church was consecrated in Jordan, and it was at the location, the January 10th inauguration. I don't know why it says inauguration. It's a consecration of a vast church on the very spot where Jesus Christ was baptized by St. John the Baptist in the Jordan River. Was an event of significant symbolic importance, both spiritually and diplomatically. And I thought this was a great story because essentially what happened was this is a large church that has been built in Jordan, and it was on land that has been donated by the king, the Muslim king of Jordan. And so it's, in fact, it's one of the largest churches. Catholic, you know, churches of any type in the Middle East. And I just think this is a wonderful thing. Obviously, the more churches everywhere is a good thing. But to have one in a predominantly Muslim country, I think Jordan is about 98%, 97% Muslim. I think Christians make up about 2%. They're very influential for their size in Jordan, but they're still a very tiny percentage. And so the fact that the king of Jordan, who by all accounts, is actually the king of Jordan, who's Muslim, is actually pretty good. I mean, he's had good relations with the West. He's not a jihadist, you know, and so they're an advanced country in a lot of ways. And so the fact that they allowed a large church to be built on the site where Jesus himself was baptized, which is cool because, of course, this week we celebrate in the old calendar. Yesterday on the 13th, we celebrated baptism of Jesus. And I think on Sunday in the new calendar, it was the celebration of the baptism of Jesus. And so the fact that there is now in this Muslim country, this new Catholic church, I think is a very good thing. And it shows, hopefully, other Muslim countries will take the kind of the direction of Jordan in being more open to Christians being able to worship. Obviously, with everything going on in Palestine and Gaza and Lebanon, to Christians, it just, you know, this is good news. And so I wanted to share that not everything going on over there is going terribly, but you know, obviously some things are. Okay, so like I said, I really appreciate when people comment on the live chat, and so I want to bring up some of those as well. Let me take this off of the page here. Okay, first comment here. August TV 123, the self-proclaimed enlightened and loving wing of the church at where Peter is were giddy Gibson lost his home in the fires. How petty and cruel. Okay. I wasn't going to bring this up, but August TV 123, you made me. A few years ago, I wrote an article at Crisis where I said that I believe that the Pachamama incident led to the COVID pandemic. And I explained that, what I meant by that. I'm not saying scientifically it did somehow. What I said was, I believe that because of the Pachamama incident, at the Vatican in October of 2019, God allowed the COVID pandemic to happen the way it did. I think he withheld some of his protection because of that. I think that's a very biblical way of looking at things, and I do believe it. Here's the thing. I don't believe everybody has to think that. I just personally believe that. I don't think it's like a Catholic doctrine. Well, the head, the founder of Where Peter Is, Mike Lewis, just went ballistic on this, and he went crazy. And anytime he brings me up, he always brings this up as example A of why I'm crazy. I mean, I probably am crazy. But it was funny because he says how crazy that is, how insane that is, that I would say Pachamama, because of Pachamama, God would then allow COVID to happen. Yet after Gibson's house burnt down, while he was being interviewed on Rogan, Mike Lewis himself tweeted out, God will not be mocked, basically saying that Gibson's house burnt down because God was not pleased with his Joe Rogan interview or basically what he does. And that's what August TV 123 is bringing up. And so I do think it's a funny standard that I can't say that Pachamama might have led to God withholding protection and COVID happening, but he can say that Gibson's house burnt down because God was displeased with him. You know, it does seem to be a bit of a double standard. Okay, Christiane says, X censors comments. That is true. I mean, here's the thing. Again, it's all about knowing, understanding where we are and where we've been. A couple years ago, there's certain things, if I tweeted them, I would have gotten banned. I would have at least been suspended temporarily. And I was suspended a few times. If I say them now, nothing happens. It's not that X is perfect. But X's system today is so much better than its system just a few years ago. And here's the other thing I will say. I don't have a big problem with a platform censoring certain comments. There is some line that has to be drawn. Like, I think everybody understands that. If somebody was, for example, making actual threats against somebody, get that guy off of there. If somebody was making just constantly lying about things that were dangerous to people, and I mean this in a real way, then I think you could argue that. I don't have a problem with X having, or Facebook having, certain content moderation, as much as that term is awful, you know, has been used awfully. I do have a problem with the government telling them what to do, which is exactly what happened. That's what Mark Zuckerberg was revealing. It was the Biden administration literally yelling and screaming at them to take things off about COVID and vaccines. That's what got that actually happened. I'm very much against that. I don't think the government should be telling these quote unquote private organizations like Facebook or X what to do. I don't have a problem with there being some form of censorship, so to speak, where some content is not allowed. I don't think you can have a 100% completely open platform and it's usable. Because what happens in all the trolls, all the porn bots, all the crazy stuff, it all takes over. And it's not, and I don't even want to be on it anymore. And X has had that problem sometimes with the porn bots or like the super anti-Semitic stuff. It just gets unusable. So I do think there's a balance. And I'm not saying the way X does it is perfect. I'm just saying it's way better than it used to be. August TV 123 again says, post again, fun fact, the current King of Jordan had a cameo on Star Trek Voyager. That might be an awesome fun fact. That is an awesome fun fact. I, of course, watch Star Trek Voyager every episode. I do not remember what episode he was in. Actually, this is reminds me, Tim Flanders and I, you know, 1 Peter 5, we're thinking about doing a Star Trek episode someday because he's a Star Trek fan. I'm a Star Trek fan. We literally just discovered this about like a month ago that we're both Star Trek fans. So we're thinking about doing a Star Trek episode at some point. But the current King of Jordan was on a cameo on Star Trek Voyager. That's pretty cool, I think. Okay, I think I'm going to wrap it up there. We're starting to get into talk about Star Trek Voyager. Obviously, now we're not really in the meat of what we're talking about. I appreciate everybody tuning in. And until next time, everybody, God love you.